ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hi, I'm Patricia Carvelis, the host of Politics Now. And throughout the week on the podcast, I'm joined by the brightest political minds at the ABC to wade through the political spin and bring you the analysis you need to know. We go beyond the headlines, digging into the key political stories of the day and making sure we have a little bit of fun along the way. I don't think it's an aberration. I don't think it's just rogue. I don't think it's just temporary. I think politics is being smashed, and anyone who thinks that it's just a passing thing is completely deluded.
Delulu, you reckon?
Delulu. It's called Politics Now, and you can find it on ABC Listen.
This week, from a submarine hidden in the sea off China, Beijing launched a nuclear-capable ballistic missile over the Pacific Ocean, gave Australia and other nations about 24 hours' notice. So, what's Xi Jinping up to? Today, Sam Roggeveen from the Lowy Institute on China's massive expansion of its nuclear arsenal and what it means for us. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Sam, on Monday, China began alerting a number of nations that it was about to test a nuclear-capable long-range missile. Now, without the warhead attached, of course. Mm-hmm. Australia was on that list. So just tell me, how do you reckon those conversations would have gone down?
Oh, I doubt there would have been much conversation at all. It would have been just a straight communication that China was about to launch with no conversation or negotiation entered into. This is a standard protocol. Australia has since objected that China didn't give enough notice, that typically it's 48 hours and China did far less than that. We don't know why China chose such short notice. I think one possibility is that 48 hours perhaps gives other countries, such as Australia, time to put some intelligence collection assets in place. China may have wanted to avoid that.
Okay, so Australia, New Zealand, Japan, they were alerted via Chinese diplomats and other nations, we presume. And at 2:01 p.m. Sydney time, a Chinese submarine launched the ballistic missile, which, according to state-run Chinese media, successfully hit its target.
It travelled over the Philippines, Guam, and past Micronesia, landing in waters about 1,000 kilometres northeast of Solomon Islands.
China's a good friend of Seoul.
We want to see increasing militarisation in our region.
We regard this, one, as destabilising, and two, as counter to the vision of the Pacific that has been articulated very clearly by Prime Minister Rambuka and other Pacific leaders.
But what do we know at this stage?
We don't know a lot. In fact, we don't even know what kind of missile this was. It was either a JL-2 or a JL-3, which is one of the two systems that China has developed for launching nuclear warheads over intercontinental distances from submarines that are submerged at sea. And we know roughly that the missile was launched from the South China Sea, and in that way was probably intended to avoid overflying Japan. Typically, tests like this are designed to validate systems that are already in service. So it's probably more likely than not that this was the JL-2 system, which is already on board Chinese nuclear submarines and which is designed to, as I said, fire nuclear warheads over very long ranges, long enough to hit the continental United States and, by implication, also Australia.
Yeah, okay. Well, the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, he says it was a provocative act.
We don't want to see any action that is destabilising or which undermines the peace, security and stability of the Pacific and the region.
But China says it was just routine military training and it was in accordance with international law. Now, the Pacific's minister, Pat Conroy, he doesn't think it was.
It's not consistent with the Hague Convention on ballistic missile testing, which would require more notice and greater information provided to countries.
What do you think?
Well, it was provocative and it was routine. It was kind of both. I mean, let's keep in mind that all countries that have these systems test them regularly. I mean, the United States undertook 4 tests of its submarine-launched ballistic missiles just last September.
Mm.
And it's important that they do that. So, you know, our government has said that this was destabilizing and escalatory, and you can understand that from an Australian perspective and from a Pacific perspective. But these are weapons that are designed with other nuclear-armed countries in mind. You know, this test is not about us.
Mm.
They are retaliatory weapons that are designed to be a guaranteed capability to strike back if any nuclear-armed country launches a first strike. Mm. So they are directed at other nuclear powers. I mean, ideally, we wouldn't have these nuclear weapons at all, but short of that, it's kind of good that they're all testing them occasionally, because what we want is for them to be safe and secure and reliable. And part of making them safe, secure, and reliable is every once in a while, you've got to test them.
Yeah.
And the other benefit of a test is that it signals to other nuclear-armed countries that we have reliable systems, that, you know, today is not a good day to attack us, because you can be sure we are guaranteed to have the capability to hit you back.
Well, yeah, as you say, these missiles could reach America, they could reach Australia. Of course, there's no suggestion that China has any intention of using one of these with a nuclear warhead attached, but what sort of damage would that do?
It's many, many times the kind of damage that was done to Hiroshima, of course, when the first atomic weapon was used. So safe to say, it's absolutely devastating. And that is the whole point of these weapons, that all sides know that any attempt to launch a first strike against the enemy would have devastating consequences for them. And in that regard, it's worth saying, actually, Sam, that China is in the midst of a massive expansion of its nuclear arsenal. Mm. Just a few years ago, it was around 300 warheads. Most experts now estimate that they are ramping up to a maximum of around 1,500 operational warheads, which would put them roughly at the same level as the United States and Russia.
Sam, the last time China conducted a test of a ballistic missile in the Pacific Ocean was in 2024. Now, that travelled more than 11,000 kilometres and it landed in the economic zone of the French Polynesia. But before that, it hadn't taken similar action for more than 40 years. So why now, twice in as many years?
Well, it's worth pointing out that China did conduct lots of missile tests in that 40-year period. Mm. It just did them over Chinese territory. It didn't fire missiles out to sea.
Mm-hmm.
So they're obviously testing some different capabilities when they fire at sea. But I think another reason why this is happening now is, as I said earlier, China's embarking now on a massive expansion of its capability. So we should actually expect that this to become much more frequent.
Well, this test, of course, it did come on the same day that Australia struck a defence treaty with Fiji. Now, the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, he says that the two things are not related. But what do you think? Is there any link whatsoever?
Well, I think Marles is basically right. So, as I said earlier, the test is not about us and it's not about the Pacific. But I do think it's worth pointing out that China could have chosen a different date for this test. I mean, it's a perfect illustration of why we're entering these kind of agreements in the first place, because I think Australia can say, you know, quite persuasively and convincingly that for us in Australia, the Pacific is priority number one. For China, it's no more than a second or third order priority.
Yeah, but China, you know, clearly it doesn't like these deals that we're doing. We did the deal with Fiji, of course, this week, but we've also done others, haven't we? With Pacific nations, how significant are they?
Look, I think the government can get a lot of credit for important diplomatic agreements, as you say, now with Fiji, Papua New Guinea as well, Vanuatu, Solomon Islands, Nauru, all with, I think, one ambition at their core. And having just said that this particular missile test is not about Australia and not about the Pacific, I would add that Australia's diplomatic activism in the region is very much about China. It has China at its core. So, you know, there was credible reporting late in the 2010s that China was seeking with various Pacific Island governments an agreement for a permanent Chinese military presence in the Pacific Islands region. And that is something that Australia desperately wants to avoid. And that is what I think the current wave of Australian diplomatic activism is really all about at its core. It's an attempt to exclude China. The big advantage that Australia has in dealing with any kind of strategic threat from China is distance. It's our greatest strategic asset. Beijing's closer to Berlin than it is to Sydney.
Yeah.
And so by all means, we want to maintain that advantage of distance.
Mind you, China has been flexing its muscle in other ways too, hasn't it? Because it did conduct last year those live fire exercises in the Tasman Sea without alerting Australia. That's pretty close to home.
Right, absolutely. And it was a great message to Australia that China's military capabilities are expanding at a rapid rate. In fact, I think we've not seen anything like it since the Second World War in terms of, you know, the pace and scale of its modernization. I've talked already about the expansion of its nuclear capabilities, but more important for Australia are the expansion of its long-range conventional, that is to say, non-nuclear capabilities, particularly China's navy. It's not the overwhelming priority for China. Taiwan is still very much the highest priority, but China has clearly been putting efforts into developing more capabilities to sail ships, submarines, fly aircraft, drones, fire missiles over extremely long ranges, long enough that they can threaten Australia.
Well, Sam, neighbouring nations, of course, might condemn this show of force, but really, what can anyone do to stop China? Should we be very worried by this?
Look, I think it is within Australia's capabilities to continue to deter Chinese power. Once again, this is not China's top priority. Its top priority is its contest with the United States. Mm. And secondly, because we're so far away, it is very difficult for China to project a lot of power in Australia's direction. So we have this massive advantage of not only distance, but the fact that that a huge ocean, huge bodies of water stand between us and China. And in military terms, that offers us a great advantage. There's a good example of this happening right now in the Ukraine war, where even though the war is very much at a stalemate, the naval war in the Black Sea is being overwhelmingly won by Ukraine over Russia, even though Russia has far more ships, is on paper a much bigger force. Modern combat conditions are such that Ukraine has been able to hold its own because it has really good missiles and it has really good drones. So a country that basically doesn't have a navy is able to hold at bay the entire Russian Black Sea fleet. That's a good example of where smart, plucky, smaller nations can hold really quite big powers at bay if they design their navies in the right way. Now, whether AUKUS is a good starting point, whether Australia acquiring nuclear-powered submarines is a good starting point for building a navy like that, well, that's a different question. I have strong views on the subject, and I tend to think it's a bad idea, but in any case, that's the direction we're moving in.
But in the end, of course, I guess no nation can stop the path that Xi Jinping is going down. I guess all we can do is prepare for it and manage it.
Well, indeed. I mean, look, what we've got to get used to is the fact that China is now already roughly equal with the United States as an economic power. And the United States in its history has never faced a country, an adversary or a competitor of that size. So this is a challenge of an entirely different scale. And what we've got to expect there is that China is going to be a leader and is going to make gains. But China doesn't have to be the dominant power. I think it's too late to stop China being the leading power, but it doesn't have to be the dominant power. If we're smart about it, we can deter China from being too influential, you know, over our affairs, over the things that we want to maintain sovereignty and freedom over. And also the region, we can help the region to achieve that kind of goal as well.
Sam Roggeveen is the director of the International Security Program at the Lowy Institute. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed and Louise Mylan. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.